Hey everyone, welcome to the Worship Artistry Podcast. My name is Jason Houtsma, and with me as always, Mr. Daniel Ornelas. What is up, Daniel?
Hey Jason, how's it going, man? It's good to be chatting with you.
It's good, yeah.
Things are good.
It's going well, man. I've got an office full of Martin guitars right now, which is...
I see them behind you there, boxes and boxes.
Yeah, I was down at Christian Musician Summit with Doug Gould, and I'm not a big worship conference guy, I don't always like them, but I loved this one actually. It was a real teaching one. They actually did a great job, like lots of workshops, tons of, like, they had vocal instructors, guitar instructors, bass instructors. I was really checking it out because I was like, oh, maybe Worship Artistry could help out with this. But all our people were there. Like, Michael Farron was there, Benji Cowart was there, Stu G, like, pretty much everyone who's been on the podcast was at this conference. I was like, all right, I'm going. But I did...
That was cool.
I did underestimate how far away Tacoma is. It's much farther than I thought it was.
So that was... Isn't it just south of Seattle?
You would think it is, but from Bellingham, it's like a 3.5-hour drive.
Oh, my God.
So I probably should have planned that a little differently. But anyway, I got all these guitars. Doug Gould, who is he's doing some stuff for us, but he's been on the podcast as well. But he's also a Martin rep. And he's like, hey, why don't you just take home 5 of these guitars and play around with them, shoot some videos and see what you can do. You know, so I have to send him back, which is, I think he's just trying to torture me. Because
basically what he's done to you is, it's like if your wife had 5 kids and then they said, okay, we want you to experience the joy of having children. And then they said, look at your amazing 5 kids. And they go, well, now I have to give them back. That's what it's like.
Well, actually, it's a lot easier than that. I think if you gave me 5 kids, I would be begging to give them back.
That's true. These are the ones that don't cry. They just gently weep.
Yeah, they do. If I do it right, if I play them right. But yeah, so hopefully I'll be shooting some videos, just trying out these different models. I've got a grand auditorium here, which I've never played before, which is pretty cool. Got a 00. I have all kinds of stuff. It's really cool. I'm curious to see if I can find any songs in these different guitars while they're here.
I'm sure you will. The tuning room is going to be have some diversity in it now.
Yeah, or at least another episode.
it's very cool.
It's coming soon. I've been tweaking it so that I can do it much easier. I actually have kind of changed up the miking situation. I've been testing it a lot, and so once that's squared away, it's going to make it much easier for me to do them, so I won't have to go down to my studio and put it on a laptop and do all the extra work. I'll be able to do it right in the office that I'm in, so hopefully that, and then all comes together. But we're not here to talk about the tuning room, Daniel, or Martin guitars.
What are we going to do?
We are here.
Who we got today?
We are here to talk about a conflict, actually, right? Which I didn't come here for, actually. So Ryan King, our keyboard instructor, he started at a new church recently, and I wanted to just talk to him about that transition. I think, you know, a lot of people have gone through changing churches, trying to get, you know, into a new worship team, trying to lead a new worship team, all that sort of thing. And so I wanted to just kind of hear how it was going for him. And so we ended up getting into the discussion, though, about dealing with conflict. And so it's a phenomenal, like, he just basically rattled off this thing of what he had done in this one situation. And I was like, that, you couldn't have handled that more perfectly. It's just like a clinic on how to handle conflict.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Have you ever had any conflict on a worship team, Daniel?
Never. No, I definitely have. You know, the funny thing about conflict, you know, if, often we talk about, you know, if you feel like you're having a conflict with someone and that your relationship is not strong or you're insecure in your relationship, then it seems like the whole relationship's on the table for discussion in that conflict. But when you know that it's not up for discussion and the conflict's just unto something better, unto a better relationship, then conflict is really amazing because it brings you closer together. Definitely does. If you can get through it and you know that, you know, the conflict is actually more about resolving something because you're fighting for your relationship. Whether that's in marriage or in worship team or whatever it is. And so I feel like when people feel like they know that the worship leader has their best interest at heart, then you can have conflict and it actually just grows the relationship as opposed to damaging it. What are your thoughts?
Yes. No, actually, I talk about it with Ryan a little bit, so I don't want to just throw in all spoilers. So let's just go ahead and thank you for weighing in. That was a great explanation. Let's let Ryan weigh in. He's got some great thoughts, and then we'll come back for some member mail.
Hey
Hey, Ryan, welcome to the podcast. Yeah, you're just going to leave me hanging like that.
I was not expecting that.
Were you hey, not
Jason,
expecting?
Glad to be here.
You just froze. You're not used to be welcome places. Normally, people are kicking you out.
I'm not. Yeah.
Well, really, really glad to have you on the podcast. You and I have been talking kind of for a number of months, just kind of talking through what this transition has been like for you. Can you tell us what's been going on with your church?
Yeah, well, over about a year and a half ago, my family moved. We moved from South Florida up to North Alabama to be closer to family and all that kind of stuff. And we live on, roughly about a 100-acre farm kind of thing, in the country sort of deal. And so it was a huge change going from city life to really country living now. So I was traveling for about a year, playing for a church up in Tennessee, and then a church called me here, about 20 minutes down the road, and, asked me to come and help them out and, with some worship directing and that sort of thing. And so, I started that back in, this past August, and it's been a huge change, in many ways, but it's good. The church, is kind of a restart, I guess you could say. It was one of the largest churches in town for many years. And then they, like, you know, a lot of churches, I've had administration changeover and things like that. And so they've kind of done a reboot, a new name, that sort of thing. And so I stepped in there back in August to start helping to lead worship and kind of give some direction to the worship ministry and everything there. So you're on
staff now, right? You are officially.
It's like a part-time, how anybody on staff at a church, it's like full-time work for part-time pay kind of thing. And so time-wise for me, it's kind of in between and everything, but yeah, I am on staff at the church. So this
is not an uncommon thing for worship pastors, right? Is going from whether you're switching churches entirely or whether you're trying to launch a new gathering or, you know, a church plant or whatever, you know, there's always these things that you have to think about whenever you step into a culture that already exists and try and bring something different. What are some of the things that you're doing to help that transition happen? Actually, well, first of all, are you transitioning anything? I should probably ask you that first. What are you doing differently than what's been done there before? Let's start with that question.
Yeah. So, just to give you a little context about this church, they were like the largest church in town for many years. They were up to, if I've been told correctly, they were running, 1,600 on a weekend. Big facility, two auditoriums. One seats 1,500, the other seats about 600. They have a K-12 Christian school. Just really, lots of facilities and that sort of thing. And their pastor retired after 30 years or 40 years. It was something, he had been there for a long time. And they had some pastors step in that just didn't really handle things well. And the church dwindled to about 300 people or so. And so they asked the son of the pastor who retired to come in and take over. He did that about 2 years ago, and people really accepted him and the new vision and everything. And so at the kind of the peak of it was, when choirs and orchestras, especially in the Southern Baptist vein of church, it kind of the way that music and worship was done at that time. It was big choirs, orchestra, kind of a cross between contemporary and traditional, but it was just a big, you know, beast to handle. And, you know, you have to have a lot of personnel to be able to pull that sort of thing off. You know, it's not just having a worship leader. Somebody has to direct the choir. Somebody has to direct the band. Somebody has to direct the orchestra, lots of prep work, all that kind of stuff. And so that is no more for, you know, multiple reasons. And so when I stepped in, it was just a band and some singers. And there really wasn't a whole lot of just fresh vision for, okay, what are we moving towards? It was all, here, let's just rehearse in order to prepare for Sunday, and that's it. And one thing that I learned a long time ago is that if all you do is rehearse, that's all you'll ever do. You'll rehearse and you'll execute. You'll rehearse and you'll execute. And there will really not be a whole lot of growth in your team. And so when I stepped in, you know, one of the first things that I asked was, I asked the senior pastor, I asked him, what is it that you see for this church, for the culture of this church, the people that attend here? Where is it that you think we should go? And actually, I asked those questions before I ever agreed to step into the role, because I needed to see if it was a good fit for me, if that's really something that I felt like I could handle. And he told me, he said, you know, people are really thirsty for new songs. They had been in a rut where they were just doing really old songs. And there's nothing wrong with old songs, but, I mean, as you know, I mean, you can eat Cheerios every day for every meal, and that's going to get old pretty fast. And so they just needed some fresh songs. He said he felt like it needed to be contemporary, very modern. I asked him, you know, what did he consider to be modern? And I mean, he said Hillsong, Elevation, Bethel, you know, stuff like that. And he said, but at the same time, he wanted to make sure that we were reaching the older generation. And he said, you know, we didn't have to break out the hymnals and pipe organ sort of thing, but he, you know, wanted to see us at least reach them in some way, whether it's with hymns or something like that. And so one of the first things that I did when I came in was I just kind of had to deal with about 2 months of using the old songs that were in the repertoire just to get a gauge on how the congregation interacts and see how they participate. And then also to see, you know, a lot of it, the biggest thing is learning people, learning, okay, who's on the team. And that's probably been one of the biggest things stepping into, you know, the musical side of things is fairly easy to figure out, but you're not just there for music, you're there for people, you're there for serving. And I needed to see, okay, all the different personalities that are on the team. Is everybody there for the right reasons? What kind of culture has been established for the ministry? And that's one thing that had not been established was any kind of culture, any kind of vision, and really nothing that says, okay, this is where we're going, this is how we're going to get there. And for everybody on the team, this is what's expected of you. And so I took about almost three months to really develop a document that really laid out for everybody the vision of where we wanted to go, where we felt like the Lord was leading us, how we were going to get there, and how we were going to respond to just different situations. You know, reminding everybody that we're there to serve one another. We're not there to serve ourselves. You know, excellence being a big key, just all those sorts of things. And I sat down with the entire team and just kind of laid it out for them, and they loved it because they just hadn't had that. So that's one of the first things that I had to do is really get my finger on the pulse of where they were, learning personalities of people. So yeah, that was kind of the first thing that I had to do whenever I stepped in.
Well, now, did you do that before or after you actually had the position?
After.
Like, okay. Because I always feel like that's one of the things that people struggle with. We see that email a lot kind of in member mail. Like, how do I take leadership? How do I do this? But you seem to, you kind of had both, right? You got to have the position, like kind of essentially handed to you being named, you're going to be the guy. Mm-hmm. But then you counterbalance that by actually coming in and serving and learning the team and learning how to, how they work, rather than going, I'm the guy, this is what we're going to do, get on board or get out of my church, which, which like people might not say that in so many words, but sometimes that's how it comes across. We're coming in, we're doing something different. So for you to be able to create vision that people can really grab onto and take ownership of, because how is it going to work if your team doesn't take ownership of the vision that you're putting in front of them?
Right. You know, a lot of it, when it comes to that sort of stuff, I try as best as possible to, let it be word driven. Mm. You know, it's kind of hard to argue with God's word. And so,
well, people seem to be pretty good at it though. They do it all the time.
I know. And there's all the interpretation side of things, but there's a lot of plain and simple stuff. And, you know, I was just looking here at, the stuff that I put together, for the team and, you know, in it, I talk a lot about, that everyone is a leader, even the drummer, the sound guy, I mean, everybody, there's always been a mindset of that, well, the worship leader, he's the leader and everybody else is just, you know, not, that somehow the singers are, background vocalists and, you know, things like that. And so that's one of the things that I had to really give him some perspective of, in terms of leadership, talking about, servanthood, stewardship, just kind of the process of how we're going to go through things, talking about attitudes, really talked about conflict, how we're supposed to handle conflict in a biblical sense, because I did encounter that in the first 2 months. I noticed that there was there were a few people on the team that I could tell they had some beef with each other, and that's the best way for Satan to create division in your team is when somebody's offended by something and it's unresolved. Mm-hmm. And when it just is kind of left alone, there's still that tension, you know, even though, and it really was kind of like, well, you do your thing and I'll do my thing. And as long as we don't cross paths, we're good. And I'm thinking, you're both serving on the same team.
Yuck.
This is not healthy. We have to fix this. And I sat both of them down and just got blunt and said, hey, you know, I want you to know that I love both of you guys. I can sense that there's tension between you two, and I just need to understand why and how we can resolve this, because there's division in our team because of this. And I don't want, you know, we don't need to have that. If we're going to be effective worship leaders, we can't have division in our team. And so, so I had to deal with that. And, you know, in being a leader, especially if you're if you are like the guy over a ministry, not just a worship leader or somebody who's a part of the team, but if you are the guy who is responsible for the team as a whole, it means you have to have some tough conversations at times. And that can be challenging, knowing how to handle this conversation. And a lot of that, it just comes through prayer. Comes through getting into God's word and saying, okay, what does his word have to say about, you know, maybe this situation? And if it doesn't really hit on that specific situation, there are, you know, things that can surround it. And you just got to pray that, you know, God, give me the wisdom to know how to handle this in love, but at the same time, sharing the truth. Those are some things that I've had to deal with. Since I've been there.
Okay. So I totally want to dig into that so much more, because I feel like this is something we've all had some kind of experience with. So, hey, did you sit them down together the first time, or did you talk to them separately? How did that happen?
Yeah, it was just kind of an evolving conversation between them separately, because I needed to know, okay, how is, you know, and I'm just using fictitious names here. John and Jason, and not the Jason that we're talking to here. you know, I talked to John just to kind of get his take on the situation that kind of created that division between, you know, he and Jason. And so just kind of talked to him briefly just to see, get his feelings on the situation. And then, you know, talked to Jason for a little bit to find out his thoughts. And I could see that both of them, there was just, at the end, a lot of this stuff is just a misunderstanding. It can be just a simple misunderstanding. It can be something that is, you know, a lot of times in the heat of moments, we can say things, and it can just be taken wrong. And sometimes those things can be meant what they were said, but other times it's not. Just because of the, you know, that emotional state that we're in when we're getting, you know, if we get into an argument or a disagreement and things like that. But then there is also the thing that I learned with this is that these two guys, they have baggage, just like we all have baggage. They've been hurt in different ways, and you know, words can hurt, and especially if those words have hurt in times past. I talked to them individually. And then just really kind of, I prayed through it, just sought the Lord for help on it. And then I pulled both of them together and had a third person involved in it just to kind of be there for accountability as to what was said and things like that.
Was it somebody on the team or was it
like, yeah, a pastor? It was another person on the team and who was on staff. And I'd already talked to him to – because he knew about this conflict between the two. And honestly, it was just, it was nothing huge, you know. It wasn't like these two guys were ready to duke it out kind of deal. But it just created enough tension that it was like, we're not going to be able to move forward until we get this resolved. So I sat all three down and wanted to, the way I approached it, I didn't approach it from a standpoint of, okay, we're going to deal with the situation between you two. I asked them to explain the situation to me because it had to do with basically some equipment in the church and how it was used. And so I just asked them, I said, how did we get to this place of using this equipment? Because, you know, one was like, we shouldn't use this equipment. The other one's like, we should. And then it, you know, just creates, it's an opinion kind of thing. And so, they each explained it to me, and it pretty much matched, and they kind of agreed with one another. And I told them, I said, well, you know, in my mind, I think that we potentially should go this direction. And they both agreed. And I said, okay, so I said, my understanding, I said, because I'm going to be honest with you guys, I've sensed that there has been some tension between you two over this issue. And it's really kind of a non-issue. And I said, can we both agree that this is where we want to go? And I know, again, I'm being vague with this, but hopefully it makes sense.
Yeah, you know, you're doing great. Yeah, okay. keep it vague. We want to appreciate privacy and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
But I said, this is, from a vision standpoint, this is where we want to go. We want to get to this point, this level. And in order to get there, we have to make some adjustments with this. Do you guys agree? But they both agreed. And I said, you know, I've sensed that up to this point, you guys haven't really agreed on it. And I know it's created some tension, but you know, the bigger thing that I care about, I said, I don't care about this equipment. If we don't make a change, I said, that's fine. I said, what I care about is you guys. And I care about you two being on this team and that we're all unified with one vision in mind, one goal in mind, that we're pursuing the same thing, in unity. That's what I care about more than any of this other stuff. And, you know, I want us all to be on the same page. You know, we're all friends here. And I said, and, you know, we're dealing with people here. And when we deal with people, there are going to be, we have differences of opinions. We're going to have disagreements. I said, but at the end of the day, we have to be able to come to a place where we can agree to disagree. And you're still my friend, you know, that we're still on the same team. That, no, I don't really quite agree with the way or the manner in which we're doing this, but I can agree with the ultimate outcome, and therefore I can support it. And they both did, and we got done with it, and they were all fine, you know. And I told them, I said, you know, the one thing that we're not going to have on this team, I said, because it will tear our team apart, is gossip and backbiting, unresolved conflict like this. I said, because there's no greater thing that the enemy will use to tear a team apart than resentment and bitterness that creates division. And I said, if you have an issue, if you have a problem, I said, number one, you need to go to the person that you have the issue with. I said, if you can't resolve it with that person, then you need to come to me and I'll step in and get involved. I said, because if you don't come to me and it continues, I'll step in anyways, because that's my job as the leader of this team. I'm going to do it in a, just like I did here, in a friendly, loving manner. But I said, we're not going to just sweep stuff under the rug, because when you do that later down the road, you're going to stomp on the rug and it's all just going to come pluming out. You've got a huge mess. So now they're good. Now, one of the guys, is no longer on the team. Of his own choice, he felt like he needed to step down and just for a season. You know, he's still at the church and that sort of thing. It's not like they, you know, he was mad and left the church kind of deal. So
yeah, that is awesome, man. That's like a clinic on how to handle conflict.
Well, one of the things that I noticed with one of these gentlemen is, you know, unfortunately, in the church, and I've experienced this personally, and as many people have, people have been hurt by the church. Now, the church doesn't hurt people; people hurt people, and it's just that because people have been hurt in the church, they feel like they've been hurt by the church. And so, one of these gentlemen. He's had a lot of hurt, past, administration who has, not appreciated him, shown appreciation. You know, when people aren't shown appreciation, that can hurt, especially when they devote time and talents and resources and things like that. And so he had a lot of past hurt, a lot of past pain, and with both of these guys, and I'll say this with anything, never handle a situation like this via text or email.
Totally.
It's just, it's horrible. And I don't do this. Like, I don't mind doing things via text to a certain point, but if I sense that this is going deeper than a, hey, what do you want for dinner kind of thing? You know, I'll say, hey, let's set up a time and talk. At the very least, I'll get them on the phone, because, and I learned this with several people that I've dealt with so far, is that when you have to look them in the eye, their response can be totally different from when they can send you a text. Because, you know, with a text, there's kind of this almost an anonymity kind of deal. I don't have to look you in the eye. You don't have to see my reaction. I can just say whatever I want to. But then when you're face to face, it tends to be a little softer. And so I found that with both of these gentlemen, because they would respond in a certain way, very harsh, via text. But when I would sit down with them and just talk to them, and really the biggest thing in it is listening to them, saying, hey, tell me, you know, how are you feeling? What are you going through? And not just like dealing with a specific situation of conflict, but just trying to get to the deeper root of it. What's going on in life? Are there issues at home? Are there issues going on in marriage or family or kids or job, whatever it might be, that is helping to contribute to the way you're feeling right now? And that was the case. One of these gentlemen, he had job issues. He had some marriage issues. He had
he's stressed.
To, Yeah, just lots. Yeah, lots of stuff. And what I found is that at the end of every time of talking with him, man, he would thank me. He'd almost be in tears. And after we'd get talking, you know, be done talking, you know, probably 15 to 30 minutes later, he'd send me a text and say, seriously, thank you for talking to me. And I think that's one thing that where leaders fall short is that one-on-one connection with the people that they're with. And which is why it's so key to it is, you know, that's one thing that I'm trying to do. It's difficult to have one-on-one relationships with everyone. You know, when you look at Jesus, he had 12. And inside of that 12, he had the really close three. And I think that's real key in whatever the size ministry that you're in, that you are investing in the people that are in your ministry one-on-one. And it's not just a, hey, how's everybody doing? Okay, great. Let's rehearse some songs and go. It's a knowing that I care more about you than I do what you bring to the table. I care more about you as a person. I care more about what's going on in your life than I do that you are the best singer on our platform. Mm-hmm. If you didn't sing another note, I would still care about you and be interested in what's going on in your life. So, and that's easier said than done. It takes effort. It takes intentionality. And so those are some things that I've had to do. And these two gentlemen, I mean, they, you know, they're just like all of us. We're all messed up individuals with baggage, and we're working out our salvation, kind of deal. And so, it just takes, continuing to invest in those guys and letting them know that, hey, I'm on your side. We may not always agree, but I am on your side, and I want you to be on my side, and let's figure out how we can get to the finish line, you know, together. Even though we may take two separate directions, we're going to get to the finish line together, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's really profound what you said just about communicating face to face and how different that interaction always is. Because mm-hmm. anytime that you're apart from one another, if I don't spend time with somebody, my mm-hmm. brain is going to start telling me a story mm-hmm. about what's going on.
Dude, that's the enemy, bro.
Yeah. Well, it's always negative, right? You're never like, very rarely are you like, I haven't talked to someone in a really long time, and you're like, we're probably just both really busy.
Yeah.
Right. You start kind of like, oh man, what's going on here? Or like, yeah. And then they said this to me and it rubbed me the wrong way and all of a sudden it goes in this other direction. And so I think it's so important to like, to do what you did and just call that out and pull it together. You know, I can think of relationships in my own life. You're like doing this and you're telling me this. I'm thinking about, do I need to go talk to anybody right now? kind of thinking it through. But yeah, I think that's a beautiful approach to it, Ryan. And like you said, it's not easy to do, right? Like it's not always the easiest thing, but man, it'll just get worse if you don't, right?
Yeah. Well, and as you do it, you know, my son Josiah, every morning when I take him to church, I mean, take him to school, we've got a few scriptures that I've just really tried to ingrain into him. And one is James 1:19. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And so every morning on our way to school, we listen to a daily audio Bible. And so he, you know, he's getting a little bit of God's word on the way. And then after we get done with it, you know, he can read a book or play or whatever he wants to in the car until we're almost to school. And then I'll reach back and take his hand, and he has to pray, and then I'll pray for him. And every time he prays, he always says, you know, God, help me to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And I believe that, you know, God put that in there in his word for us, for every situation, because we're so easy to just speak and just talk. And in the heat of the moment, the emotions kick in and the adrenaline kicks in, and we can just say whatever we want to. And my mom has always said, you know, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. You know, you need to listen twice as much as you speak. And so in all of these situations, when you're dealing with people, we all need to learn to listen. And listening is there's something behind listening. It's not just hearing. you know, we can all just sit there and nod, and, you know, but we have to listen actively to what the person is saying and try to understand not just what they're saying, but what's behind what they're saying. Why are they saying what they're saying? A lot of times that takes clarification, you know, which is a whole, you know, a whole nother topic for another time, but just learning to, just to listen to the person. And, you know, I find that when we do listen, the people that I've sat down with and they feel like I have listened to them, they really appreciate it. Versus if all we do is just sit there and try to fix their problem or try to, you know, just talk and talk and talk. And sometimes listening requires not giving a solution. Sometimes listening just, you know, sometimes it does. Sometimes it requires sharing, like we said, sharing the truth in love, sharing hard truths. Every situation is different. There is no cookie cutter formula for every conflict. Mm-hmm. But God does give us general, I think, guidelines to that helps us as we deal with all of those. And so just listening is a huge thing.
Man, there is so much good stuff in that conversation. I kind of want to just leave it here because I've got other questions for you, but I'll just be for another time because I'm just, yeah. I'm like sit on that, listen to that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of good stuff. Orion, thanks so much for being on the podcast, man. It's always great to have you, and looking forward to popping out a few more lessons with you in the next couple of
days. Yeah, man. Sounds good.
Jason. Hey, Jason, come back. Come back.
Oh, hello?
Come back.
Yes.
Yeah. Lost in the land of beautiful acoustic guitars. You're lost in Narnia of the Narnia of guitar world.
That I am. And may I not age while I'm there and then return. Oh, it's hard. It's hard. I swear I'm going to get work done this week. I promise. We have so many cool things we're working on. I will not get entirely distracted.
Whatever, man. Whatever.
Well, hey, Daniel, let's be done with the guitars. And what time is it?
It's time for member mail, which means I must hit it.
Today's member mail comes to us from Carl. And Carl asks a very simple question, actually. He says, in a worship set package, how much of a variance in BPMs can I go before it becomes too abrupt? I.e. going from Lay Me Down, which is 130 beats per minute, to No Other Name, which is 74 beats per minute. That is a great, thoughtful, and very practical question, Carl. What do you think, Daniel?
Gosh, man, I never even think about stuff that way. I kind of feel like as long as I can transition well between songs, I don't really know. Obviously, you don't want it to be like a roller coaster where it goes up and down, up and down, up and down for the set. But I feel like I've done sets where there's, you know, praise at the top and worship at the back end. That's how we used to say it back in the day, where it would be like all the up songs at the front. And then I've done sets where we've kind of worshiped for a bit and then some of the slow songs and end on the high note with all the up-tempo stuff with the higher BPMs. So I don't know. And I've even had sets where there's, you know, there's a up song and then there's a more down song with a slower BPM, like mid-tempo, back into another up song. And I don't feel like that's bad either. It's all about, you know, confidence, I guess, and also making sure that what happens in between those songs transitions well. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Jace?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head in that it really comes down to how you go about doing it, right? Like, I don't think about specific BPMs. Like, I don't put numbers to it. Although I will say that it is funny how certain BPMs are more singable. Like, I was working on a song recently and I was trying to find what that right tempo was. And I was like, well, Hillsong always seems to put everything at about 72 beats per minute. So let's see how that works. And it was amazing how it worked. It was like, oh, wow, that is the right tempo to sing this song at. So kind of just a side note on tempos. But I do think it is about the transition. I think it's about and where it is in the set. So, for example, if you have, you know, if Lay Me Down is your first song, right, which is a real fast, quick moving song. It's a great like startup song. And then you immediately from that very first song drop to No Other Name. That is going to feel like a massive drop off because you just got everybody engaged. And then all of a sudden you're like, and we're getting down. Now, if you've just done three big songs in a row and then you drop down to No Other Name, that is going to then change the dynamic, and your ears are going to be ready for that transition. So I think a lot of it has to do with where it is in the set. We actually have a great article on worship artistry. I'll promote it actually up this week, just kind of about how to put together a worship set that engages everyone, because there is kind of a flow to it. And if you sit in that flow, if you kind of use that as a template to start, you're not being manipulative or anything. It's just kind of like, this is how the human ear naturally hears this, right? And how our emotions respond. And so kind of just knowing, not to like flip the lights on and off on everybody constantly, but to kind of take them through a journey with the worship set is really helpful. Cool. So
really good, man. Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah. So all that to say is, you know, as long as it's, the transition works, it's fine, you know?
Yeah. Actually, an interesting thought was, when we first were playing out with Brenton Brown after he wrote Everlasting God, and then Chris Tomlin recorded it as well, kind of slow tempo, and then Lincoln put it out on radio at like double the tempo. And I was like, and to me, that had been playing the song, I was like, that's ridiculous. It just sounds stupid so fast. But the funny thing is that it really connected with people, and a lot of people in their churches will play that version where it's super up tempo. So even within the same song, sometimes you can adjust the tempo of the actual song, unless you're playing with tracks, obviously. And you have to work through all that, but you can actually adjust the tempo of a song. Certain songs will work, you know, as a mid-tempo or as an up-tempo song.
Right. Yeah. It is kind of funny. Sometimes it actually really lends fresh ears. I do that all the time. In fact, with the tuning room, I've actually done that with a number of songs that we do at church that are normally more kind of upbeat, you know, intro songs, but that I've really thought about the lyrics on. And so, you know, taking them down and playing them at a lower tempo or a quieter dynamic can actually really like bring a song to life that you've played a million times, and vice versa. Not as much, but it's a lot easier to bring a song down than it is to take a down song and bring it up, but it can be done.
Oh yeah. Perfect.
Awesome. Well, hey, if you have any member mail questions, we are happy to answer them. You can hit us up at on our Facebook page, facebook.com/worshipartistry. You can also email us, support@worshipartistry.com. We love answering. We need some new questions, so bring them in. We like them. And if you would like to learn songs with tutorials that really help you take them and put them in a five-piece scenario, a five-piece arrangement, so that you can help equip your team or equip yourself, hit up worshipartistry.com. You can sign up for a free account. You don't need a credit card or anything. You can try it out, and then you can decide if you really want to dive in with us. And finally, if you don't even want to do that, you could always just leave a review on iTunes for our podcast. We really appreciate that. It really does help when you do that. So thank you so much for supporting us. And Daniel, we'll see you next week.
Catch you later, man. Good times.